Welcome to Northern Goal, the football podcast from the Evening Express and Press and Journal. I'm Ryan Cryle, and today I'm joined by Danny Law and Andy Skinner. How are we, folks?
Yeah, very well, thanks.
All good, thanks, Ryan. Yeah, yourself?
Yeah, not bad. It's been a bit of a miserable couple of days weather-wise, but I'm feeling good, this week, we're almost back to what we could class as a normal episode, in inverted commas. I know none of these episodes are normal, but with most of our teams in action over the weekend and a mountain of discussion to get through, hopefully it'll resemble the sort of episodes we used to do at the start of all this. As we almost always do, we'll start with Aberdeen's 0-0 draw at Tannadice. Danny, you were there.
Yeah,
seemed like a very frustrating afternoon for the Dons, yeah?
It was, yeah. I mean, I had the privilege of going down to Tannadice on Saturday. It was my first post-lockdown game. Andy's obviously been used to watching these games in the new normal, but I must admit I found the whole experience quite surreal. But that was just pre and post match. During the game, you kind of zone into it, and it's like watching a normal game, really, albeit without the fans. But quite an odd experience going in, getting your temperature taken, sitting there with mask throughout, and then the post match as well. So I found that quite interesting. The game itself, I thought the first half Aberdeen played really well. They should have cruised it. They should have been maybe two or three goals ahead. I thought the Scott Wright, Ryan Hedges partnership again looked really good in that half. But as the game wore on and went into the second half, you did start to wonder, well, Marley Watkins isn't really getting much service here. I'm not sure where a goal is going to come from. And as Dennett McInnes kind of identified after the game, but I think most of us could see it, he's crying out for the type of player like Sam Cosgrove that you could go long to, because I think as I put in my match report, with Mark Reynolds and Mark Connolly sitting quite deep, there wasn't really the space there for Marley Watkins to run in behind. So yeah, it was frustrating. 2 points dropped for Aberdeen because they really should have won that game, especially in the first half. They should have been out of sight, but not to be, and they move on to Hamilton tonight.
I suppose that's the problem, though, in a sense, is that in the first half, the chances were there. There were a couple that Scott Wright had, the one where he kind of chipped over the goalkeeper, was cleared off the line. Then there was another one where he was pretty free at the back post and the shot just wasn't strong enough. Are we worried too much about this lack of killer instinct, or as you say, with players coming back and it just being international break just finished, that they'll sharpen up and the goals will start to flow again?
Yeah, I mean, I think you've got to look into the fact that Sam Cosgrove, who has been Aberdeen's main man for the last couple of seasons, they've done pretty well considering that he hasn't been able to play since pre-season because of that knee injury. I mean, Scott Wright, you're touching on him there. I think it's 6 goals in 69 games for the Dons, and half of them came against Partick Thistle in one game in 2017. But I actually think Scott's been really good this season. And I'm sure he'll start chipping in with more. And I think he's got one this season already. But I've been pretty encouraged by how he's been getting on. But, I mean, he will have came off the pitch feeling like he should have had at least one at the weekend. But I think, I mean, Derek McInnes has said that there's a good chance that Sam Cosgrove might feature in tonight's game against Hamilton. And that's perfectly timed with this big doubleheader against Celtic coming around the corner.
I mean, a lot of Aberdeen's play, despite the lack of goals, has looked really dynamic. You know, Danny touched on the, you know, some of the play that, you know, is building up to these chances. And, you know, Scott Wright's been very much in the thick of that. And, you know, just getting into some great positions, really good understanding with Ryan Hedges. It does seem as if Aberdeen have kind of added an extra, you know, dynamism to their game. I mean, do you feel when Sam Cosgrove does kind of come back into that team that he'll actually have more service than ever before?
Possibly. I mean, I spoke to Joe Lewis after the game and I asked him about the squad depth, and he said that he thinks this is by far the strongest squad that Dennett McInnes has assembled during Joe Lewis's time. But I think throughout Dennett McInnes's time at the club, this is probably as strong as the squad's been, certainly in comparison to other teams in the league as well. I think once Cosgrove is back up and running, and if he can get into that form that he's shown in the last couple of seasons, then, I mean, they've got Curtis Main to come back, Mikey Devlin, Matty Kennedy, Greg Lee also to fit in there. So, I mean, he's going to have so many options. The difficult job that Derek McInnes might have is trying to keep all these guys happy, because you've already got guys like Hernandez on the bench who was probably expecting more game time than what he's been given so far. So it's going to be a bit of a balancing act. But, I mean, there will be a lot of games coming up. And with the five subs rule as well, you are able to give guys a bit more game time than normal. So so it's possibly, I mean, it's obviously a good thing to have a strong squad.
Obviously, we need to mention the fact that Aberdeen should have had a chance to put themselves ahead from 12 yards. Somehow, referee Alan Muir missing Lauren Shanklin's almost goalkeeper-esque lunge towards the ball with his hand. I've seen the angle from behind the goal. I'd read somewhere that the referee was unsighted. To me, it looks like he should see it. I don't know how he doesn't see it, because I don't know what he's looking at if he's not looking at the ball. That was obviously, without dwelling too much on it, it was obviously a howler.
Yeah, I mean, that should have been a penalty, but I mean, ultimately, when Aberdeen reflect on that game, that's one element of it, but they created more than enough chances throughout the first half in particular, and even some in the second half, to have won that game quite comfortably. And I mean, they almost paid for it at the end when Logan Chalmers went through and Joe Lewis kind of bailed them out with a really good save. So, I mean, they could have came away with nothing, which would have been a real travesty, given that they dominated pretty much all of that game. But, I mean, that's what happens. If you don't take your chances, you can always pay the price like that in the closing stages. But yeah, I mean, for sure, it was definitely a penalty.
Yeah, it looked like Peter Pollitt that was standing just in front of the referee from where he was standing. You know, Pollitt was really close to the ref, so I don't know if he was partially unsighted because of that. But
oh, don't stick up for him, Andy.
It was clear as day. And the other thing I was going to mention was just the reaction of the Aberdeen players as well. I mean, it was just so, you know, so blatant, really, that there was something amiss.
Yeah, you always wonder with that, don't you? Whether the ref thinks they said, they are protesting quite a lot here. In those situations. Anyway, let's move on to Aberdeen's run of games that's coming up, because it's obviously huge. Hamilton tonight, in the spirit of creating content that will be out of date as soon as it's published. Tonight's obviously a must-win game, in the sense that a win would put Aberdeen above Hibs, we will come on to in a minute. But also, it's a win ahead of two big games against a Celtic team that aren't playing particularly well at the moment, the first in the league on Sunday. And then next weekend, the big one, the Scottish Cup semi-final at Hampden. So, yeah, Hamilton, good. It seems like the time to go out and put a few past Hamilton and really build the confidence, doesn't it?
I think so. And I think with, I mean, it is a game. I mean, it's not a, it's a game that Aberdeen should win. They'll start as big favourites for it. I mean, the one thing with Hamilton is, I think in their last seven games, both teams have scored. So they've been scoring goals, but they've been leaking them as well. Huge evidence of that on at the weekend with their 5-3 game against St Johnstone. So, I mean, I guess that sets up for being a 0-0 tonight, but there seems to be a good chance that whenever Hamilton play, you're guaranteed a lot of goal mouth action. I would anticipate that Aberdeen should win tonight, because they'll be determined to bounce back after the weekend, because you could tell by the frustration of McInnes and Joe Lewis after the game. And you're right, with this, the game against Celtic coming this weekend, they'll want to go into that with a good confidence booster. And yeah, I would expect that Aberdeen will probably win tonight. But I mean, Hamilton can be a tricky team. And if Aberdeen don't show, or if they show similar levels of that lack of creativity that they did down at Tannadice, then it could be a long evening. But if they get an early goal and that forces Hamilton to come out and try to play, then that's where they can get even more joy and win by a couple of goals.
I saw some of Brian Rice's comments after the game on Saturday, and he was just baffled by the fact that they'd scored three goals at home and still haven't taken a point from the game. You know, it does seem as if they maybe do have a wee bit of a soft centre. But when it comes to, you know, a game at Pittodrie, you might see a little bit more of a rigid game plan from Hamilton. And, you know, the key to unlocking that might be, as Danny says there, just that early goal to settle things, you know, particularly if Aberdeen are going to, you know, dominate the ball as they did on Saturday. So just have to try and look to, you know, make it as straightforward a night as possible, really.
Just on the Premiership game against Celtic on Sunday, to my mind, Aberdeen don't really get a better chance than this to beat Celtic, based on how they played at the weekend and how they've kind of been criticised for playing in recent weeks. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think so. But, I mean, obviously Celtic have got AC Milan to come first. So, I mean, there might be a bit of weariness there in the legs too, depending on how that game goes. But, yeah, I mean, this is a perfect chance. And I know that I've spoken to a few Aberdeen fans and they've said, well, they're not going to beat Celtic in both games. But, I mean, I think if Aberdeen were to win the first game, then they would be heading into that semi-final with so much confidence that they could easily win both of them. But yeah, I mean, I think this appears to be, especially if Aberdeen win tonight and Celtic maybe go through a difficult evening against AC Milan, then this would be the ideal time to be coming up against Celtic.
Looking at it from a Celtic point of view, you know, given the pressure that Neil Lennon's under just now off the back of the Old Firm defeat on Saturday, I mean, this coming run of games for them must feel like a really tough schedule, you know, with Aberdeen twice, once in a semi-final. And obviously the two European games against AC Milan and an on-form Lille side in there, you know, these are massive games. And, you know, Aberdeen have that opportunity on Sunday to kind of go out and make it a really difficult afternoon for them. I guess that'll be the message, really, looking into that one. You know, there might be, again, a bit of weariness in Celtic from Thursday night's exploits. So I think Aberdeen just have to try and capitalise on that, really.
Truth be told, Danny, something you said rang true with me in the sense that I'm kind of been weighing it up in my head, like, do we want to beat them on Sunday? Because if we beat them on Sunday, then the chances of us beating them at Hampden are slimmer. You know, almost to take a loss on Sunday if it meant getting a win the following weekend. But anyway, we'll see what happens. We must move on. Mentioned Hibs before. They drew 0-0 with Ross County and Dingwall at the weekend, and we'll discuss that next. Ross County with what is obviously a pretty good result against a team who've been strong in the Premiership so far this season at the weekend. It looked very much like a backs to the wall kind of performance. I think Stuart Kettlewell even admitted himself that they rode their luck a bit. There were a few sort of dodgy moments, a couple of saves. I think Kyle McGuinness hit the post pretty spectacularly from range. But it's, I think we need to clarify the fact that over the last few weeks we've said that Ross County's defence is still a bit ropey. I'm actually this week going to sort of disagree with that, despite the fact that I'm the one that said it a couple of times. It's safe to say that Ross County are more resilient this season, yeah, first of all.
I think they've made themselves harder to beat. I mean, if you look at their goals against column, you know, having now played everyone in the league, you know, it's down by a few goals on what it was last season. You know, they've played 11 games and conceded 16 goals. Half of those goals are accounted for in the games against Celtic and Aberdeen, in which they were very easy to beat. But, you know, that aside, they have been more resilient. They had to sort of change their defensive system on Saturday. Stuart Kettlewell went for a back three, which he's done on a couple of occasions, and I think that was, you know, with a view to sort of trying to counter Hibs, who play a similar way. Hibs obviously had a number of chances. Martin Boyle was, you know, wasteful with probably the best one in the first half. But, you know, although County, I think, settled into the game after a big spell of Hibs pressure early in the game, I think, you know, they struggled to create too many of their own clear-cut chances. But in the end, it became a very good point with the... I mean, Connor Randall was obviously dismissed in the second half. And, you know, after that, had Stuart Kettlewell been offered a point, then he undoubtedly would have taken it. So, given the form that Hibs have been in, it goes down as a very creditable clean sheet that they picked up.
You mentioned there, Andy, the difference in the goal record, which I was going to come on to. So the exact numbers are they've conceded 16 after 11, but as you said again, they've shipped five of those to Celtic, three Aberdeen, two Rangers. So they've only conceded six in that other eight league outings, which when you take out when they played everyone last season, where they conceded 23 and 11, and then remove Celtic, Dons and Rangers again, it was 10. So on all measures, they're conceding less goals. I think in previous weeks, a little bit of our concerns come with the way that it's kind of like the harem scarem way they kind of get through games sometimes. They rely on goal line clearances, like last ditch saves, like the post saves them. But maybe we've been looking at this the wrong way, and like teams like County are always going to have to ride their luck a little bit, as Stuart Kettle says. Is that probably right to say?
Yeah, something that Callum Morris touched on in an interview which is in today's paper is, you know, a lot of the, you know, the goals that they conceded that amounted to that, you know, really high number of 60 in 30 games last season, they came in games where they kind of lost one and then they really struggled to stem the flow. You know, they were on the end of quite a few, you know, real tough beatings last season, and you know, that's something that they've eradicated to an extent this season. I mean, those Celtic and Aberdeen games, albeit against, you know, on-form teams, were a wee bit concerning. But it's, I guess, the tighter games that they've played, you know, the clean sheets that they've racked up have been against Motherwell, Hamilton, St Johnstone and Hibs, which, you know, there's good attacking threat in all those teams. They've all been tight matches. You know, the three that they won from those have all been by a single goal. So I think in games like that, they're always going to come under a certain amount of pressure. And just with some of the additions that have been made, I think Alex Giacobiti has been a really shrewd addition to the back line. You know, he's played every game, I think, and he's been a real standout performer for them. So I think that they're undoubtedly harder to beat. But, you know, I guess it's only the first round of fixtures. They won't be getting too carried away to this point.
Part of their defensive line, I suppose, well, behind their defensive line, the goalkeeper, Ross Doohan, who's on loan from Celtic for the season, he made his debut at the weekend, coming in for Ross Laidlaw. They're all called Buddy Ross. What did you think of his performance? It seemed like he was bailed out a couple of times, but he also made a couple of pretty vital saves as well.
I thought Doohan looked good. I mean, that was probably one of the big positives for the game for Stuart Kettlewell. I mean, I think, you know, ultimately Hibs had 27 shots on goal, and on another occasion they could have won that game pretty comfortably. So I think while County kept the clean sheet, they were obviously giving up quite a few chances throughout the match, but I mean, Doohan looked good. I think Ross Laidlaw had looked fairly good this season as well, but I would expect that Doohan will probably get a run in the team now if on the basis of that performance.
Yeah, I don't think. I mean, when Laidlaw was when Ross Doohan was brought in during the summer, and it was a signing that had been kind of arranged for, you know, a considerable amount of time, and County were just waiting on getting the green light from Celtic once they signed their own keeper. And as it happened, you know, Barkas wasn't brought into to Celtic until pretty much the eve of the season. So it left Stuart Kettlewell with, you know, very little option but to play Ross Laidlaw from the start. And he's been pretty consistent, you know, through the season. He's bailed him out on a few occasions. You know, he's been a solid, commanding pair of hands. But I think Ross Doohan probably was brought in with, you know, the idea of probably being the first choice, and you know, had the signing been completed earlier and he had a bit more time to work with the back line, he probably would have started the season. So I think maybe off the back of, you know, a couple of good performances with Scotland under-21s through the week, you know, Kettlewell thought it was the right time to pitch him in. And as Danny says, I would imagine he probably will get a good run in the team now to try and build on that first clean sheet that he gained on Saturday.
You could look at any run of games a team has over the course of the league season. They're all important. But the fact that County next have Motherwell, Dundee United both away, and then Livy at home, that's the next three weekends. it is an important spell when you look at the table. I think County are sitting seventh and those teams are all round about them. So this could be quite an important sort of 3 weeks in terms of where they go into that second half of the season, I suppose, yeah?
Yeah, they've come through a really tough run, actually. They've played pretty much the top four in the last few weeks. So, no, this is an important spell for them because they're sitting in a decent place. They're mid-table with a decent margin between them and the sides at the bottom of the table. So, these games will be key. Play Motherwell on Saturday, who they've got a pretty good record against in recent times. They've managed to win down at Fir Park last season when, Motherwell obviously had a brilliant season. So, they will see this as a real opportunity, and particularly given, the games coming up are against teams that are very close to them in the league. It does give them that chance to try and create a bit of distance.
Okay, so next up we'll move on to Cali Thistle's opening championship game of the season. Just so the listeners know, the reason I'm sounding slightly out of breath and unable to get my breath back is the fact that I had to run for a parcel in the middle of that. And I don't understand why I'm still out of breath from that, but we'll see if it comes back anytime soon. Anyway, next up, Cali Thistle, 2-1 defeat to Dunfermline at East End Park. Okay, so there were no points on the opening weekend for Cali Thistle, despite the fact they went up really early at East End Park against Dunfermline, Nikolai Todorov getting the goal. Todorov then suffered what looks like a broken rib, which, considering he's joining Shane Sutherland and Miles Storey on the treatment table, it's, guys, would you agree, worrying times for Cali ahead of Ayr this weekend?
I think John Robertson would have been cursing his luck as soon as Nikolai Todorov went down after 19 minutes on Saturday, because, as you mentioned, Miles Storey already looks like he's going to be out for a number of weeks with a hamstring injury. Shane Sutherland, I think, might have a better chance of being available for this weekend, but I mean, Nikolai Todorov had been given his opportunity. He was a player that had to be quite patient last season with the form that Jordan White was in, but, showed a decent impact from the bench in a number of games. So with the start that he made by getting off the mark just 90 seconds into the game, he was linking up really well with particularly Daniel Mackay, who set up the goal. He must have really thought that Todorov was looking like the answer to this conundrum that he's found himself in the last few weeks, but just with the impact of the collision with Ewan Murray, he got up initially, looked like he might be able to continue, but then it became apparent before the physio had even got to the corner flag that he couldn't continue. So John Robertson brought on James Vincent, which kind of underlined the lack of attacking options. He had to reshuffle by kind of putting a combination of Daniel Mackay and James Keatings up front, and just a total readjustment to the attacking line, which, if Sutherland doesn't make it this weekend, then it'll have to be that kind of cobbled together front line again, which is certainly an issue that, John Robertson could be doing without so early in the season.
Especially this season, when it's a season where you need to make a fast start, there's no real second chances if you don't get off to a flyer.
Yeah, I think so. But I mean, I think as well, the other thing that got to bear in mind is, I mean, I think there's an expectation that Dunfermline will probably be one of the teams this season that are pushing for that top four, top three position. I don't know, Andy, whether was there evidence of that at the weekend? I know they've got a bit of, I think it's possibly German investment money coming in. And I think they've got quite high hopes as a club that they can have a promising season. But do they look like one of the teams that Cali Thistle could be competing with this season? With obviously the expectation was that Hearts are going to be the big title favourites, and they perhaps underlined that with their performance against Dundee on the opening night. But what did you make of Dunfermline, Andy?
Yeah, Dunfermline looked good. They were obviously really confident going into the game because they've got a perfect record in the Betfred Cup, which has included a couple of big results against Falkirk and Kilmarnock. So there was a clear, buzz about them, even despite losing the early goal. They came into the game pretty quickly after that. I mean, it was a relatively even game throughout the second half. Dunfermline probably shaded the chances that were created, in terms of the clear-cut ones. But it wasn't really until the latter stages that, you know, they were able to press home the advantage. It was the goals that Inverness conceded that were the real sore point for them, because the first two came from set pieces. Mm-hmm. The third one was a breakaway, which you know, Declan McManus shrugged off Brad Mackay a bit too easily and managed to you know, put the ball in the,
it was
the
great
top
finish,
corner. Yeah, took a wee deflection off Mackay actually as he tried to recover from it. But no, Dunfermline will certainly be up there, because they showed a bit of a spark. I mean, it wasn't, again, evident all throughout the game, but they did show a bit of a cutting edge when it mattered in the game. I certainly think that they'll be a force to be reckoned with.
Okay, we'll move on then. We'll go down a division to Cove Rangers and Peterhead. And first of all, Cove, they, well, with eerie similarities to last time when they made their League Two debut, they stepped into the unknown at the Balmoral Stadium against East Fife, a team who'd been pretty strong last season, but they beat them 3-1, and it's, by the sounds of it, it was pretty convincing stuff. It's obviously a really promising weekend for Cove, is it? Does it change the expectations about what they can achieve this season, or did we already think they might be dark horses to extremely well?
Yeah, I mean, I don't even think dark horses. I think there is an expectation that Cove are a team that's capable of doing well in League One this season. I mean, we saw with Partick Thistle losing 1-0 against Clyde. I mean, although there are some full-time teams in that division, but I do think that Cove will be able to compete, especially on at home. I mean, they play so well on that pitch, and they're set up for it. And I think most of us have got quite high hopes for what Cove can do this season. It's going to be difficult. They've never been in League One before, and they'll just have to take it week by week. But you can see that they've had so much momentum for the last few years. They continued the momentum from the Highland League into League Two last year. And if they start the season with a winning run, then that momentum will continue again and will propel them into a position where they can be challenging at the top of the league. But I mean, it will be difficult for them when they're coming up against full-time teams. But I mean, it'd be no surprise for me to see Cove doing well this weekend and doing well over the course of the season. I think they're set up for that. And I mean, they've made no secret of it either. They're aiming to go up promotions. They aim this season again. They want to become a full-time team. And you can see that. If they manage to do that, everything's in place for them to go in and try and achieve that goal.
And with that momentum behind them, you know, you'd fancy them to give it a really good crack this season. And touching on the full-time teams as well, you just have to think of the amount of pressure that is on both Partick Thistle and Falkirk, who will feel that they shouldn't be in that league at all. And particularly Falkirk, who, you know, didn't manage to go up last season. Thistle obviously got off to a losing start on Saturday. So, you know, for a team like Cove, with that momentum behind them, you know, I see no reason why they can't, you know, try and be a presence in amongst that sort of top four and really, you know, try and pile that pressure on some of the teams with a little bit more expectation and, you know, a bit more of a burden on them. You know, from what's gone on before.
So obviously an eventful game, Cove missing a penalty, Mitch Megginson of all people missing a penalty early on, before East Fife got a man sent off, and Megginson did become the scorer of Cove's first goal in League One, just as he was their first scorer in League Two last season. Megginson got another one before Leighton McIntosh added Cove's third, it's either side of an East Fife goal. East Fife ended up with 9 men, it should be said, by the end of the game. We touched on it a little bit there, but how important for Cove this season are their games on the Astro at the Balmoral? That's going to be the basis of any title challenge, to put it bluntly.
Yeah, they've got a big advantage playing on that park, and it's worked well for them last season. And you'd expect that if they are going to have a good season, then the home form is going to be right up there in winning the vast majority of their games, and then doing as well as they can on the road. But it's difficult again. I mean, it's one of those situations where there's there's obviously no fans getting in, and it would be interesting to see with some of the bigger games that are coming up as well, what the crowds would have been for that, because as Cove go up the league, it's always interested to see whether they're going to start drawing more fans in away from people that would maybe be going to Aberdeen games, or would just that aren't going to games at the moment, that would perhaps enjoy going along to watch League One football. So it's disappointing, obviously, that we don't have that, but hopefully that's something that's rectified in the coming weeks or months.
Okay, we're bubbling through the lower leagues nicely here. Cove's next game we'll come to in a minute, because it's one we're all, I'm sure, very excited for. But firstly, Peterhead, also in League One, they started with a 2-0 loss to Airdrie, who operate one of those hybrid models between full-time and part-time. Jim McInally, the Peterhead boss, sounded relatively happy with the performance and how Peterhead competed with a team that's obviously got a bit more money than they do, a bit more resources. The real issue, though, for me, was injuries to Simon Ferry and Ben Armour. They both done their hamstrings. Isaac Lane was forced off from up front with a knee injury, or a knee concern, shall we say. And Gary McKenzie at centre-half went off a concussion. That adds to Dundee Loney Josh Mulligan's ankle problem that was pre-existing. That's a spine of a team there potentially out, isn't it?
Yeah, it's starting to mount up a wee bit. And I know that, I mean, Simon Ferry was very good at centre-half against Dundee United. And yeah, he's obviously one of the, I mean, possibly their most important player. He's brings a lot of assuredness and calmness, whether he's playing in midfield or defence. So yeah, that's disappointing for them. The injuries are starting to mount up, and they don't have the biggest squad in the world, so they can't really afford too many more to go down. But yeah, I mean, like you say, it's a huge game this weekend, Peterhead against Cove, and that's certainly one that we're all looking forward to.
The good thing is that it sounds like Isaac Lane, who's previously had an ACL injury, was taken off as a precaution at the Pennycars Stadium. So he's been wrapped in cotton wool a bit, maybe with one eye on the big game this weekend. Gary McKenzie, there's also hopes that he'll be back. And Jim McInally has gone to great lengths in the Evening Express today, and Press and Journal as well, to make clear that they've got a lot of options in pretty much every position. They're just hoping now that they get a run where there aren't any more injuries, which would obviously make things a bit difficult in terms of subs. It should be said that Gary Fraser is still self-isolating after his partner tested positive for COVID-19 a week or so ago. So, Peterhead v Cove. It's one of these again, isn't it? Like, as you mentioned earlier on, Danny, when we're talking about Cove, you just think, why couldn't fans be allowed in by this point? It's just so, it's like fate has conspired against this, because this is the start of a huge Northeast derby that we're crying out for, and it's going to be played behind closed doors.
Yeah, it's frustrating. In normal times, there'd be a great crowd and a lot of buzz about this game, and you've got that added dimension that there's so many of the Cove players that are former Peterhead players as well, so they'll know the ground. And the two teams, although they've not came up against each other, they'll know exactly what to expect, given there's so many links between them. But yeah, it's a fascinating game in store. It'll be really interesting to see how it transpires. But yeah, just it'd be great. I mean, I think you would get a really good crowd at that game either at Peterhead or at Cove. Fascinating to see how that one goes this weekend. Difficult to predict, actually.
It's very difficult to predict, because there clearly is going to be that edge to it. You know, I guess Peterhead are going to be desperate to try and silence a wee bit of the noise that, you know, people are making about Cove and what they can potentially do this season. And it's just got the makings of a really good derby tussle. Even Cove's games against Elgin last season, although it's not quite as much of a geographical rivalry, it's still a bit of a sort of north derby in some ways. And you know, with crowds, those were really competitive games on each occasion. So, you know, whether Cove stick about in League One for too long, we don't know. But, you know, this could be the makings of a really strong rivalry.
That's my big fear, that Cove or Peterhead get promoted, or one of them goes down, and then the chances gone and we've had a whole season with no fans. Should be said that the game's at Balmour, which maybe levels the playing field a little bit. That was an intentional pun. Elgin City, they started their season in League Two at the weekend as well. They won 4-1 at Stranraer. Big journey to Stair Park and a big win. I think are Elgin, I know I mentioned this about Cove, but are Elgin giving us something to think about in terms of their prospects for the season?
I don't see why not. I mean, Elgin finished last season just before it was curtailed in fantastic form. They were really onto, you know, something good there before the season was curtailed, and having kept the majority of their squad, with the exception notably of Shane Sutherland, you know, there's been a real feeling that they can take a good amount of momentum into this campaign. And on the evidence of the early games this season, they, you know, despite Sutherland's absence, they don't seem to have lost that kind of firepower. They've obviously replaced that with some of the attacking signings they've brought in. You know, Josh Peters has been drafted in, Joel McBeth, Smart Osadolor came in midway through last season, and Kane Hester's, you know, a really exciting attacking player as well. So Gavin Bryce has been really kind of excited about what Elgin can do this season, and that's showed in a really, really strong start, which, you know, it's a great result for them on Saturday, coming up against a team that were playing at a higher level last season and beating them so convincingly on their own patch. It gives a lot of grounds for encouragement.
Yeah, I watched the highlights of it actually, and I mean, Elgin ran over the top of them. It was, I mean, the first goal in particular was a great play from Smart Osadolor, friend of the show, but I mean, really great. I mean, turn and pass, and then just this great pass kind of through the eye of the needle to set up Russell Dingwall. But I mean, they've had some pretty impressive wins against Stirling Albion, who were a team that a lot of people were talking about because they'd had some quite good recruitment ahead of the season. Montrose, obviously winning Stranraer at the weekend. They've got Brechin this weekend, which I think should be a comfortable one for them. And then they've got the next two coming up are Edinburgh City and Queen's Park. And that's going to be a real test, because that's two teams that you would expect to be up there. So from the highlights that I saw at the weekend, they're playing some really good stuff just now.
I look forward to, in a couple of weeks' time, after Elgin City have dispatched both Edinburgh City and Queen's Park, to declaring that they're going to win the league. Andy, just finally, Russell Dingwall's brother, Tony Dingwall, has been offered a deal at Elgin, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. He's been training with them for a few weeks. I mean, obviously, he was with Raith Rovers last season, you know, he's a guy that's, you know, from the north, so having been released by Raith Rovers after their promotion to the Championship, he's found himself without a club. So, yeah, when I spoke to Gavin Price last week, I mean, he wasn't, you know, getting too carried away about the prospect of signing Tony Dingwall, because it's obviously a big decision for Tony to make, whether he comes out of full-time football at this stage in his career. So, you know, whether he still harbours ambitions of getting another full-time club, or if he's ready to relocate to the north and go down the part-time route will be on his mind just now. But I think Gavin Price was still quite sort of open-ended on that one, really. But he would love to get him, because, you know, a player that's played at you know, a higher level throughout his career and showed a lot of promise early on in his career with Ross County, just stalled a little bit for him with a combination of you know, injuries and, you know, a couple of managers that you know, didn't see him as really an integral part of their plans. But yeah, that's one that Gavin Price will certainly hope that he can get tied up, and he would add a really exciting dimension to Elgin's team if he can do so.
All right. So that concludes our section on the lower leagues for this week. Just the first week of the season. Plenty more to come from there. Next up, we'll discuss the pretty dramatic Highland League Cup semi-finals over the weekend. I don't know where to start. Will we start with Rothes' win at Fermartin then, 2-1 after extra time. Great showing from the Speysiders when they were without six established members of their squad, and Stephen Anderson, Robbie Donaldson, Paul McLeod, Ryan McRitchie, Aidan Wilson and Greg Main all out It sounded like they were the better team. I think Paul Lawson, the Fermanagh manager, said that himself, that despite the fact that Fermanagh went 1-0 up after the break and could have killed the game, that Rothes at that point really sort of turned the screw and were the team that were going to win it if it was concluded before penalties, yeah?
Yeah, I think so. I was surprised because I spoke to Ross Jack before the game for a preview piece. He was telling me about this horrendous injuries and guys missing through illness and how difficult their pre-season build-up had been. And I came off the phone after talking to him and thought, oh, well, sounds like it'll be a Fermanagh win this weekend. Just he sounded, he certainly lulled me into a false sense of security, I guess. But he definitely was playing down his side's chances in the way that I guess some shrewd managers do. But I mean, it sounded from the reports that it was that they were worthy winners. And I mean, I think one thing we have to do is, I mean, we have to kind of remember where Rothes were only a few seasons ago, and the job that Ross Jack's done actually there in turning things around is nothing short of incredible, really. And I mean, they would be one of the teams that if a 17 game Highland League season goes ahead, that you'd have to think that they start to come into the picture of one of the sides that could look to challenge a Brora or a Fraser Bra. And again, that's a mark of how far they've come, but they'll be going into this weekend's final feeling really confident after a good win there.
Should be said that it was Ali Sutherland who scored the fine equaliser in normal time before an extra time. Craig Cormack got on behind and scored the winner. It's actually the first final Rothes have reached since 2010. They lost the Highland League Cup final on that occasion to Forres. It's only the third time they've actually been in the League Cup final. The last time they won silverware was the North of Scotland Cup in 1978-79. So that kind of, as we'll get on to in a minute, that shows how big an occasion this is for the likes of a Rothes this coming weekend.
That's a Forest side that included a young Graham Shinney, I'll hasten to add. That was his first ever silverware after he went on loan to the Can-Cans from Cali Thistle. But no, it's a fantastic achievement. And just as Danny says, to be able to kind of pick up from where they'd left off last season, you know, despite that long absence, you know, missing a few players, it shows an incredible resolve. And, you know, it'll be a great occasion for them in this weekend's final.
Okay, so to the other teams that were competing in the semi-finals, what I hinted at before was the fact that I think before the semi-finals took place, there was probably an acceptance that the favourites were Fermanagh in the Fermanagh Rothes game and Brora Rangers at Dudgeon Park against Buckey Thistle. However, by the end of the weekend, both Rothes and Buckey had progressed to the final. Buckey beating Brora on penalties after a 2-2 draw. Sorry. It's great to see in a sense, though, isn't it? The fact that teams like Buckey haven't won a trophy since they won the league a few years ago, and Rothes are like trying to end a 40-year wait for a trophy. So, I mean, for Martin, and maybe not had the success in the league, Brora have obviously are current champions. They've won plenty of silverware in recent years, but it's good to see Buckey and Rothes getting their day in the sun.
Yeah, well, you know, Ryan, you've got to expect the unexpected when it comes to Highland League football. I agree with you, though. I think we probably all thought that because Brora had played pretty well in those Betfred Cup games against Hibernian, Dundee and Cove Rangers, that they would be match sharp and it would be maybe perhaps difficult for Buckey in their first competitive game since March to step up and match them. But in the end, I guess maybe when it went to extra time as well, perhaps the effort that Brora had put in over those last three games, perhaps that maybe played a factor as well. But yeah, I mean, I was surprised there. You thought with home advantage as well that Brora you would favour them in that one. But Andy, you were there. How did you find it?
I would say that was the best game I've seen all season. Yeah, and I really enjoyed that one on Sunday. And it was just really heartening to see how Buckey went about it. They gave it absolutely everything. Again, you know, all the signs before the game seemed to point towards you know, Brora coming out on top, given that they'd, you know, had three competitive games in the Betfred Cup already behind them, they, in which they showed up well in pretty much every single one of them. You know, there's a lot for them to go into that game with encouragement from. But I mean, Stephen Mackay after the game admitted that, you know, Bucky looked the hungrier team, and it was hard to dispute that. They, you know, they came out, got off to the perfect start by going ahead just 2 minutes into the game through Stephen Ross. And, you know, although Brora pegged them back a couple of times, they just showed incredible character to keep getting back up and, you know, posing the question to Brora. There was a lot that went against Bucky as well, with, you know, Lewis McKinnon going down just at the end of the 90 minutes with a hamstring injury. Another experienced defender in Hamish Munro was sent off during extra time for hauling down Paul Brindle. So, and of course, Bucky missed their first penalty in the shootout as well. So just a tremendous show of character from Graeme Stewart's side. And it was difficult to dispute that Bucky were the deserving winners on the day.
So who's going to win then at Kinnock Park this coming weekend?
Again, I mean, I think that's, I mean, given the results at the weekend, who would be foolish enough to try and predict the score this weekend? I just think it's quite a close one to call, and they'll both go into it feeling absolutely elated as well after having won those games. So I think it'd be another cracking game. And I think as well that, I mean, the Highland League went to great trouble to try and get these games live streamed, and I'm glad that they were rewarded with that by two really entertaining games, and the guys that paid their money got their money's worth with an extra 30 minutes and penalty shootout as well on Sunday. So two great semi-finals, and I guess the final's got a lot to live up to this weekend.
Yeah, for two sides that, you know, as you say, Bucky haven't won any silverware since they won the league a few years ago. Roth is going, you know, for their first silverware in 40 years, did you say, Ryan?
Well, 41.
I mean, it's set up to be a fantastic final and a great morale booster for both clubs as well, given the gloom that we've come through in the last few months. To have this chance of silverware, you know, at the end of it all, it's a really big lift for, you know, just for all Highland League fans, I would say, just to have this. And, you know, fair play to the league for facilitating everything with, you know, the video streams that seem to work really well. Difficult to see how it will go on Saturday. But, I mean, speaking to Graeme Stewart after the game, he was mindful of the fact that they're obviously going to be missing, you know, Hamish Munro through suspension and potentially Lewis McKinnon through his injury. So, you know, it would probably be a boost to Rothes with that being in mind. But, yeah, as Danny says, you'd be foolish to try and come down on one side given what we've seen already this weekend.
One thing that we should mention just before we wrap up today is the fact that Fairmartin boss Paul Lawson cut a pretty disconsolate figure after the game at the weekend, suggested that he was considering giving up the North Lodge Park hot seat due to an increasing amount of disappointments in the last wee while. Colleague Callum suggests that he thinks that Fairmartin were clearly hoping for this League Cup campaign left over from last season to be a boost that could be the start of an upturn in fortunes towards their ultimate goal of winning the league. They obviously only managed to finish sixth in the Highland League last term. What are you guys' thoughts? Should Paul Lawson stick around with Fairmartin? Is there more to come from that team?
Yeah, I mean, they've got a strong squad of players there. They maybe need one or two more, or maybe a freshen things up a little bit, perhaps. The difficult thing, I think, for Martin and Paul Lawson in this instance is that it's the uncertainty. We don't know if the league's going to start next month. Obviously, they put their whole pre-season campaign into playing hopefully two matches in the semi-final and the final. So it would have just felt like there was so much at stake in that game for it being the first competitive game that they'd played since March. So you can understand his frustrations, and I guess like any manager, you question everything, what you could have done differently. But I'm sure this week he's had a bit more time to sit down and think about things and where he sees the club going, if he wants to remain part of it. So it's an interesting one to watch. But I'm sure that he. But I guess, I mean, perhaps one of the more decisive factors is when the regular Highland League season can get back up and running again, because the teams have to dwell on these defeats a lot longer now, because they won't be playing again until at least November the 28th.
Okay, so I think that will do us for today, almost at the hour for this week's episode of the Northern Goal. If you've enjoyed what you've heard today, please email any questions or comments to northerngoal@bctmedia.co.uk. Thanks, of course, to Danny and Andy.
Thanks very much.
No problem, always a pleasure.
Andy can go back to his bed now. If you've liked what you've heard, please like and subscribe. Northern Goal is available on whatever podcast app you use. And finally, enjoy the football, wherever you are this week. Cheers.
Hope you loved the episode. And if you did, we'd be grateful if you could leave us a review or rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to pick up your copies of the Press and Journal and Evening Express every day for the best football writing and analysis in the North.